Our meeting will come back to order from the recess. We're going to hear two bills for sure tonight. House File 2586, which is a re-referral from the Committee on Higher Education, and 2890, a bill about expanding innovation zone opportunities. We'll begin, Representative Bennett, with 2586. If you would please take your place at the testifiers table. Please introduce yourself for the record, Representative Bennett, so it's official, and then move your bill. It'll be laying over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Peggy Bennett, Representative for 27A, and I move my bill, House File 2586.
Yes, Representative Bennett moves House File 2586 to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Please proceed to explain your bill, because you have no amendments, correct?
That is correct. Though yeah. We might have some language tweaks later on down the
Surely.
Line with this, but I will explain those.
Sure.
And I do have some testifiers that are coming. As a matter of fact, I see one of them right now, so that's awesome. A couple of them. Well, I want to give you a little overview about what this bill is, what it will do, and I'm excited about some changes I've heard recently about it as well, so I will share those also. But House File 2586 would have MNSCU and the Department of Education collaborate to identify guideline scores for the state's reading and math high school MCA exams, and that would help determine the student's readiness for post-secondary options. These guidelines will create a point of information for students, families, and educators about student preparation for post-secondary education. And many of you are probably aware that there are a lot of remedial costs happening with post-secondary schools right now. A report just came out that actually showed students that graduate from high school and go on to post-secondary are spending $59 million over the last 5 years in remediation costs because they're needing extra help in reading or math to get up to snuff for their college courses. So that's a lot of money to spend for these students, a lot of time spent when they're not getting credit. And the goal for House File 2586 is to help students and families be more informed so they can prepare and hopefully not have to take remedial classes. They can prepare ahead of time. So if you look on page 3 of the bill, you can see that we ask MNSCU to work with the Department of Education to identify scores on the high school MCA exams that indicate students are ready to enter either a 2- or 4-year program. And I want to stress that these are guidelines. They are not anywhere near cut scores. We're not going to call them cut scores. Absolutely not the purpose. These are for informational purposes only. And it's stated in the bill as guidelines. I'm excited because I was just informed recently that the Minnesota Department of Education people have actually already been working on these guideline scores and have them really ready to roll out, I believe, by the end of this year. And I'm thinking that there will be some testifiers on that behalf. So a lot of the legwork is already done, and MNSCU only needs to review this and make sure that they agree with them and they're going to work for them. So that's a good thing. And on page 6 of the bill, we have, similar to what was done last year in the last year's higher education bill for the ACT, we're just stating that students who meet or exceed whatever guideline scores MNSCU and MDE identify as being ready, that they would not need to take a remedial course in the same subject. Now, this might change slightly as I have spoken with MNSCU, and they would like to go to multiple measurements, and I'm going to let them explain that more, but I'm very willing to work with them on that. So I'm pretty sure everybody in this committee, being more K-12, understands what the MCAs are, and also that they are very much a good measurement for college readiness. The state standards were developed to indicate college readiness, and so the assessment that we have, the MCAs, is shown actually with pretty high correlation to whether students will be ready or not And I'm going to kind of go through this quickly because I think I don't need to review a lot, and I'll let you ask questions if you want to afterwards. So I guess the biggest point of this is let's give students and parents and teachers a better view of if students are ready, and an earlier view if students are on track to be ready for their college or career choice after they graduate. So really starting in third grade when students begin taking the MCAs, there would be a target score that would show as a student, am I on track or am I not on track to be prepared for a college or career after they graduate. So I think one great advantage of this is it creates a seamless or begins to create a seamless connection between K-12 and post-secondary. I believe that's important that more and more we work together, we collaborate together as we meet students' needs. And I'm actually going to just stop right here because I have some testifiers. So, Madam Chair, if you're okay with them coming down, they can explain some more, too.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. And I'd like to call to the testifiers table Josh Crossan and maybe Mr. Bartholomew at the same time. We have extra chairs, so please join us. Welcome to our committee, both of you. We have pages, so Representative Flanagan, you can hand those off to the page. Thanks.
Sorry.
Yes, we do have pages working tonight, so let's take advantage of them. They've given up part of their day to be here with us, so thank you very much. Welcome, gentlemen, to the committee. Mr. Crossan, why don't you begin, say your name for the record, and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Joshua Crossan, and I work with MNCAN. MNCAN is an education advocacy nonprofit that works to improve public education for each and every kid in the state of Minnesota. We are at MNCAN thrilled about this piece of legislation. We think that this legislation streamlines our K-12 standards with our higher ed standards. Something that I'm passing along to you is our remediation and graduation rates as compared and related to the MCAs. As you can see, our MCA results, when a kid is considered proficient by the MCAs, has a 9% math remediation, a 21% reading remediation. And I think this is telling when you compare this to not only the state averages of remediation and graduation rates, but in law, we already do what we're trying to do here with the ACT. The ACT benchmarks that are established by the ACT have a remediation rate of about 25% compared to our remediation rates. This is a little outdated, but our current remediation rates for the state of Minnesota are about 24%, about the same. As the MCA is compared to the ACT, we're not saying that you should choose one over the other, but we should look at the MCAs as a more streamlined response to looking at our state standards on K-12 as well as our higher ed standards. I'd also just like to mention that the MCAs are a lot more accessible especially for kids of color. Kids of color are less likely to pass tests like the ACT. The ACT passage rate, according to the ACT benchmarks for African American students, is at a 5%. So 5% of African American kids who take the ACTs will pass the four subject areas. African Americans in math, according to the MCAs, is about 23% proficient. Math in the ACT is about 14% proficient. Hispanic kids in 10th grade reading is about 33% proficient in the MCAs. They're 31% proficient by the ACTs. Native American science, 32% proficient based on the MCAs, and only 18% proficient by the ACTs. So not only does the MCAs actually do a better job of aligning our state standards with higher ed standards, but it's more accessible for our kids of color and low-income kids. With that, I could leave it for questions, but MNCAN is generally supportive of this legislation. So we thank Representative
Mr. Crossan, that was a great commercial for our MCAs. Now, if you could just take that and broadcast that would be great for me. Maybe not everyone, but welcome, Mr. Bartholomew. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. We'd also like to thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 2586. We believe Representative Bennett's bill will not only help encourage students to think about a post-secondary education, but they'll also be better prepared. As Representative Bennett mentioned, according to the 2016 Getting Prepared report, 26% of high school students who enroll in a Minnesota post-secondary institution within 2 years of graduation are required to take remedial courses in either reading or math. And in real terms, this means nearly 8,500 students from the class of 2013 were required to spend $11.8 million to take remedial courses. And while the overall percentage of students needing remediation is down slightly to 26%, the percent of low-income and students of color taking remedial courses is going up. Our point in highlighting these numbers is that we can do more earlier to reduce the need for remediation. As Representative Bennett has said, we can do this by helping students, families, and educators understand where students are relative to post-secondary readiness while they still have time to act in high school. In fact, as Representative Bennett mentioned again, it's our understanding that the Department of Education is changing the report parents get about their students' MCA results to better reflect the direction proposed by this bill. We think this is an awesome move. The department has done a great job of including our post-secondary systems in developing our K-12 standards and the MCAs. And while we support the change the department is making for parent MCA reports, we also support the provision in 2586 that asks Minsky to validate the college-ready scores. This is important for two reasons. First, it'll help to clarify what college readiness scores mean. And second, and maybe even more importantly, it means our largest post-secondary system will formally partner with our K-12 system to tell students and families in advance what their expectations for college admission are. Finally, we'd like to express our support for Section 2 on page 6. And finally, the improvements proposed by Representative Bennett's bill in conjunction with the changes being made by MDE will together help all students graduate better prepared for post-secondary education. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, are there questions for these two testifiers before they return to their seats? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious, students take these placement exams in colleges, and that's when they determine the remediation. I'm an author on the bill, so I like the bill. But it just made me think they can still continue to do that practice at the college or university level, correct?
Mr. Bartholomew or Mr. Clausen, either
Madam
one.
Chair, Representative Peterson, yes, I think is the quick answer. As a parent and the student get their MCA report, say they get their 11th grade math report, and they see that their score is below the college readiness indicator, they'll still graduate and they can still go to a Minsky institution, but they should understand that they likely will take the AccuPlace or MP placed. I think one of the goals is if students score above that level, then they wouldn't be required to take the remedial. It kind of just depends on where they are relative to the readiness scores.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing this bill forward. I had a question about the cut scores for, no, I'm sorry, that's not the word, guidelines for two-year or four-year college or university, and just is that going to be a single score? Just my concern is if the two-year, guideline is lower than the four-year guideline, that is counterintuitive to what we're trying to do, which is encourage more young people to go into the trades or, other careers that you can access through a two-year degree. So I was just wondering about if there was that delineation or if there's just going to be one guideline. You're ready for post-secondary.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you.
The author of the bill.
Representative Seltzer also. This is something I believe we're going to work with Minsky and MDE more, since MDE has already created these guideline scores, and I don't believe they're delineated between 2 and 4 year colleges. I think it might be wise to utilize what they have right now, maybe start with that, and then if we see a need later on to set a 2 year college score. Are you saying that you would like to see the 2 year or no?
No.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I would not like to see two separate guideline scores because I think that that devalues a 2 year degree.
And Representative Seltzer, when the department comes to the table, I bet they will clarify some of this.
Thank you.
So, but thanks for the question. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm struck by the difference in non-white scores. I think you said specifically African-American scores on the ACT being consistently lower than the MCA. Is that because of the way the ACT is written in terms of cultural specificity, or is there something that we're missing? Is that, which is the really the better test for we're talking about college readiness. Is the ACT significantly different in what way and why?
Mr. Crossan.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Ward. According to the remediation rates and the average GPAs of those who are passing the ACTs compared to the MCAs, the MCA is looking like a better indicator of college readiness. Specifically, looking at math, the remediation rate for those who are considered proficient in math is about 9%. Reading, still have some work to do around the MCAs. It's about 20%, which is still significantly better than where we are with the ACTs, which, again, is around 25%.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got that. Mm-hmm. What I don't understand is, what is it about the ACT that makes it less attractive or that particularly African-American students aren't succeeding? And again, is it that the ACT is written with a cultural bias, or what? Why is there a discrepancy between the two? And we're setting aside the ACT as a college readiness measurement. So I want to understand why that's.
Mr. Crossan, do you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, and I first wanted to say we're not setting, sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Ward, we're not setting aside the ACT as a standard for college readiness. I think this bill is working in collaboration with the ACT and the ACCUPLACER. And as for your first question, I don't have the answer to that. I can definitely check in with some test writing folks and the ACT as well. But showing that the passage rate for all four subject areas in the ACT is at a 5% with black students, that's extremely alarming, and I would encourage this body to take a look at that as well.
We have testifier Paku Vang. Are you ready to come to the table? And gentlemen, don't go far because there may be questions. If not, Minnesota Department of Education, would you come forward and present? Yes, Ms. Dukin, we want you up here too.
Madam Chair, members, if it's okay with you, I have some handouts to show our
we have
updated
pages.
Reporting.
Pages, would you welcome Mr. McHenry to the committee, and please say your name for the record and begin. And Ms. Stout, yes, we'll have you down shortly. Sorry about that. But I thought Representative Ward's question did address the department's work that they're doing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kevin McHenry, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Education. Again, I want to thank you, Madam Chair, the author, Representative Bennett, for bringing this bill forward for this discussion. And I also do want to thank the previous testifiers as well. As a department, we really have been working hard to improve the usability of our MCAs. Again, they are aligned to our state standards. They are accessible. We go through bias review. We have teachers participate in building our tests. So we're doing our best to make sure that we have the right assessment. But we also want to make sure that what we're doing is bringing forth the right reporting, so it's informing how students are performing, so parents can understand, so they can help make informed decisions. What I do want to point out to you all is on page 5 of the bill, it's in paragraph N5.5, specifically on lines 5.8, already in legislation, it indicates that the commissioner must establish empirically derived benchmarks on adaptive assessments in grades 3 through 8 that reveal a trajectory towards career and college readiness. So what we are passing out to you all right now are three different documents. One is a overall report in grade 7, which is required, again, in legislation. But the other two reports that you also will be getting is we do have our reading MCA in grades 10, and we have a math MCA in grade 11. So we included those reports too, because when we were updating our reports, we wanted to make sure that we were including it for all assessments and that we didn't just stop right at the end of eighth grade. So as you'll note, if you flip over into our reports, and I do want to note it's a draft report. It's not a specific student. Paul Bunyan's very familiar, but we're not giving out any private personal information. I know you guys will be hearing that subject soon. But you can see, if you look on the third page when you open up, what we'll have is our goal progress score, as well as where the student is performing on the MCA. And you'll see that as well on the grade 10 and 11, where we have our career and college readiness indicator goal score and the MCA score. What you'll notice is the benchmarks for college and career readiness, the trajectory towards college and career readiness, they are established beginning in third grade, and they go all the way through our entire assessment. So what we're already providing here is an indicator on how a student is performing or getting ready for college and career. Through our assessment division, we did work to actually do correlational studies with a college, with a nationally recognized college entrance exam, so we could equate our MCA scores as close as possible to an exam that would be used for college and career or college entrance. So we feel that the first part of the bill that's being proposed by Representative Bennett, that we're meeting that requirement in terms of indicating how students are performing on our tests and are they performing on a trajectory towards performing well on college in college and career. So we wanted to make sure that the committee was aware that I think we were accomplishing the work or the main intent of getting the information to the parents of the work. I know there's extra pieces in the bill as well, but we wanted to make sure that that was in front of the author and the committee as well as you all are making your decisions. One thing that we do want to be careful, from the department perspective, is again, I know we've touched on the guidelines and cut scores. We wanted to make sure that we were clear as you guys were deliberating, or you all were deliberating, that we are not in favor of adding any cut scores into our MCAs, and we feel like the information contained in these reports is something that gets at the goal of this bill. One thing that we did want to be careful on, these are new reports that come out this year for students. So these are updated from last year. So any decisions to change this report, we would be looking at having to update a report for the following school year. And again, there have been some significant change in testing over the years. We do want to try to be as consistent as possible and implement the laws that are passed. But we would encourage you to take a look at these reports and see if those are to your satisfaction in terms of projecting college and career readiness before making any further changes that would change the way we report to students and parents right now. So with that, I would stand for questions. Again, we do have Ms. Dugan, our Director of Statewide Assessments, that's available for any questions, specifically if you'd like to get into the details on how we correlated our MCAs with college entrance. We're more than happy to answer any specific questions.
Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You say that that MDE has developed correlations between the MCA results and ACT results?
Mr. Dugan, why don't you introduce yourself and address that question?
Thank you. Jennifer Dugan, Minnesota Department of Education, the Director for Statewide Testing. And yes, we looked at MCA scores and also the ACT scores and plan scores for grade 10 students in a common cohort, and looked at 2 years of data so that we had the most robust matching possible, and looked at the MCA scores in correlation to the ACT scores.
Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It would really be quite helpful to have that, some kind of summary of that to look at while we're having this discussion. It's difficult to tell how close that correlation is, you know, what kind of patterns there are and whatever, and I believe we've seen some of that in the past, but I can't call it up on demand here. Another question, Madam Chair?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Could either of you describe in some level of detail any similarity or differences between the level of math on the MCAs for 11th grade math and the ACT math? And I can fill you in on the ACT math if you can just tell me about the MCAs.
Well, we have the most robust standards in the nation, so go for it, Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. Yes, we do have incredibly robust standards, and so if you go out to the ACT site and look at their standards or the alignment of the content for ACT, many of the content included there is actually aligned to the content in our on our grade 8 academic standards, and so much of the it's not all, but a great proportion of the when you highlight the two in grade 8 colors highlighting and grade 11 highlighting, there's more grade 8, especially in the algebra strand, as you might.
Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm really looking for a specific, you know, how far does the MCA 11 go in math?
Ms. Dugan.
The content standards go to Algebra 2. So that the content on the MCA is determined by the Minnesota Academic Standards, and the course requirement is Algebra 2, as defined by the Minnesota Academic Standards.
Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So does the test go all the way through the end of the topics of Algebra 2 then?
Ms. Dugan, I don't know. Would you know that? Yes.
As defined by the Minnesota Academic Standards, yes.
Representative Yarusso.
Thank you. Does that look like the typical course in Algebra 2?
Ms. Dugan.
I'm trying to get at what the topics are. I want to hear, like, because I'm quite familiar with the topics that are covered on the ACT, and I'm trying to get some kind of feel for something that's not vague of what this correlation actually looks like, so that we can get at the question we had a moment ago about the differences in achievement between the MCA results and the ACT results, because if they're identical, not they're obviously not identical tests. If they were identical tests, we would expect to have identical results. They're not identical tests. We have a difference in results, and I'm trying to get at how do we assess that when we're looking at this bill.
Ms. Dugan.
We can go back and do some alignment using information on ACT's website. I think what you're looking more is less of the alignment, and because a student doesn't need to get all of the questions correct in order to be meets or exceeds. And so the content is aligned, the Minnesota Academic Standards, and the probably actually more so than the standards, it's the achievement levels that you would want to look at. as far as the description of what a student needs to master to be defined or to achieve meets or exceeds. So we can look at that much more than how far does the content go. It's where is that meets expectation.
Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative. So another factor in these two assessments, ACT and the MCAs, is the way they're administered, and you're probably familiar with that, but the ACT is timed, the MCAs are not, and I think that can make a big difference for a number of students and could be part of the factor for the differing results.
Mr. McHenry, did you have something to say before I call on Representative Yarusso again?
Madam Chair, no, Representative Bennett just covered that.
Thank you.
Topic.
Representative Yarusso, continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you just pointed out a good point about the achievement levels, and so even if we had the identical range of content on the two tests, we could still have differences between them because of the emphasis on how many questions and how it's scored between the two. The ACT is heavily weighted toward Algebra 2 topics, and it includes the beginning concepts of trigonometry, but not, you know, with the triangles and whatnot, but not all the way through that. But it is heavily weighted toward the more advanced topics in the Algebra 2. And one of the other differences is the amount of reading dependence in each of those. But so that would be very interesting to see, you know, what do we see when you do these correlations? If we have a correlation that's valid for the whole, it may still not be valid for subgroups within that whole because of people may have had circumstances that have capped, provided a kind of a truncated distribution for some of our subgroups. For example, if students have been limited in their language development in the early grades, that will have a long-lasting effect on their math achievement. And that can eventually be overcome, but may or may not have been, you know, by the time we get to this thing. And so it would be interesting to see a separate correlation of how does the MCA correlate for subgroups of students to see if we've got any kind of issues we need to tease out there.
Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just want to make sure I clarify to the committee that this bill is not meant to pit the ACT against the MCAs at all.
Correct.
We're not getting rid of the ACT, and as a matter of fact, I think we all understand multiple measures are good for students, and that's what this is meant to do, is create multiple measures for students to look at, as well as the MCAs give an advantage of being given much earlier, starting in third grade. They're very timely, being now that they're available online and so on. I believe results can be immediate, and students can be remediated much sooner than when they find out when they take the ACT in 11th or 12th grade. So not a competition at all. I believe these two assessments can definitely enhance each other.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Bennett, first of all, let me publicly apologize to you because you had reached out to me a couple months ago, or a while back anyway, I can't remember, about this bill, and I had actually crafted a response to you and then just never sent it because I got caught up in my work. And so I just want to acknowledge that you had reached out to me to talk about this. My first question is to Commissioner McHenry.
Representative Mariani, be sure you use your microphone. I guess it is there. Thank you.
I'll try. I pointed it this way, but Commissioner McHenry, what's the department's position, if there is one, relative to the use of a single summative test score to determine whether a student can successfully complete credit-bearing coursework in college?
Assistant Commissioner McHenry.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, first and foremost, I just want to be clear that us bringing forward the reporting on our MCAs was more to help inform the committee. And so that's our first and foremost piece that we wanted to ensure that
I understand, Madam Chair, I'm not accusing you of an agenda here. I'm just trying to set up a further question, but thank you. I appreciate it.
and then, Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, of course, we want to make sure that our test can do as much as possible, meet our academic standards. We'd like for it to be used for college entrance, but we realize it's difficult to put everything that you would like into a test, have that be a short, defined test, and meet all the specific outcomes that you would like. So on that, I'm not trying to dodge the question, but I'm just saying it's difficult to say you can get everything that you want out of a test in one single test. We do work with MNSCU on this to make sure that what we can do in our MCAs that are aligned to our state standards, that we're pulling out the reports that are useful for them. So MNSCU can really help make a decision on what they're using our MCAs for college admittance, or if there's remediation. And we're just trying to provide that type of information to MNSCU.
Representative Mariani. It's not a gotcha question. I totally respect the commissioner saying, hey, listen, we have good MCAs and we have good standards, and you know, and I can accept all that. The issue here is that we're being called by this language to basically okay the identification of a score on the MCA as indicating to students that they'll be prepared to successfully complete credit-bearing coursework. It seems to me that there are other issues, there are other factors, there are other inputs, there are other deciding factors that determine. I went to college. Mm-hmm. I had pretty good test scores, going to college, into college. I had some other issues, that quite frankly challenged the notion that I was prepared to successfully complete credit-bearing coursework. So that's really what I'm fishing for, whether or not the department has given thought to, spoken to, or articulated, whether or not there may be other issues, other factors that are important for a student graduating from Minnesota schools to be prepared to successfully complete credit-bearing coursework other than the score on an MCA.
Mr. McHenry.
And Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, you obviously raise a good point. There are multiple measures in how a student can perform. A student may perform well on a test and then have other issues, as you raise. But to maybe get at what you're asking, we are working with MNSCU. We have presented MNSCU with these reports. We also have presented MNSCU with the correlational study. So MNSCU can review in order to determine if this is the proper route to go. We don't have a specific answer back for them that MNSCU has said, we agree these scores are right. But on the face value from the information that we presented to them, they expressed to us that after reviewing if they agree with our research, they felt confident that if they indicate that a student scores a specific score on ACT, they wouldn't have to do remediation. That they would be open to having this MCA score as well as a baseline, so students would not have to do any specific remediation.
Representative Mariani.
And Representative Bennett, you talked about multiple measures, and I guess an ACT and an MCA are multiple tests. I don't think of those as multiple measures, however. I think we're talking about two tests. They're different tests, but we know that success is tied to a number of other issues, and so I guess I won't ask the question as much as I'll just encourage you. This is what I had written in my email that I never sent to you, and I apologize, that I would encourage you to think about multiple measures in terms of providing information to students relative to their ability to be successful in credit-bearing coursework in college. My concern with this language is that we really stack the deck pretty heavily on one measure here, and I'm not, and I know Ms. Dugan and I I've gone back and forth on this a little bit, and she's way smarter than I am, so she may be right, but I'm not convinced that MCA assessments are so thoroughly aligned with college readiness and college success. I think we want to get there. I'm not sure it's even important for us to get there. I think it's important for us to have a indicator on the MCAs to tell us something while we then prepare our students in other ways that tells them other things about how to be a successful college student. So I think that this really moves us in the direction that we really fought awfully hard to get away from when we eliminated the high-stakes testing in our secondary expected outcomes. And we were really trying to open up something that was much more inclusive and informed by a broader range of research than the research that led into the 1990s and the early 2000s that put us on this path of a single measurement. So I want to ask a question, but I do think that I think that I have absolutely no doubt that you're well-intentioned here. I just think this doesn't work. It doesn't do what you really want it, or at least what I think you really want to do. That's it, Madam Chair.
Well, members, looking at the handout that Assistant Commissioner McHenry has provided us, if you look inside grade 5 and you see exactly what the world's best workforce in one of the 5 criteria is getting at, and that is that our children are making progress toward college and career readiness. And here we have it demonstrated in this particular chart or charts, in both reading and math. And I have to personally salute you, Department, for demonstrating this to us, because it is part of a very important piece of legislation that was enacted, and the world's best workforce is, I think, evidenced in this as far as one of the criteria. So personally, thank you for that. Are there other questions for these two testifiers before I bring down Ms. Stout? Thank you very much. And we'll be talking to you again, I'm sure, about this. So stay tuned. Ms. Stout, and if there's anyone else, yes, please. Ms. Pang, come forward. Since I called your name first, Ms. Pang, why don't you introduce yourself and begin?
Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair Erickson and members. My name is Paku Yang, and I'm System Director of P20 and College Readiness at the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And thank you for this opportunity to provide some comments on House File 2586. First, we want to emphasize that we would like to make this effort work for both K-12 and higher ed, as career and college readiness is very important to the state of Minnesota. And we have been working with Representative Bennett, and we will continue to work with her as the bill moves forward. As the Minnesota Department of Education stated in their testimony, they are already required to develop empirically derived, clearly defined benchmarks for career and college readiness for students' MCA results in third grade through eighth grade. In addition, they created career and college readiness indicators for 10th grade reading MCA and the 11th grade math MCA. MNSCU is supportive of using information that has already been developed by MDE to help inform parents, students, and teachers on students' progress towards career and college readiness. We feel, however, decisions about course placement of students into developmental or college-level coursework are best made at the local college or university level based on multiple indicators after considering the course of action that best supports a student's success in college-level coursework. National research suggests that using more than one measure improves outcomes for students by more accurately placing them into the correct level of coursework from the beginning. MNSCU would be supportive of using college-ready MCA scores as one of the indicators, one of the measures for course placement decisions alongside other measures and other assessments. And so overall, I want to express that we do support the spirit of providing more information to students, families, and teachers for student preparation towards career and college readiness. And we will continue to work with Representative Bennett regarding our feedback using MCA test scores as a single determinant to place students into college-level courses. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Peng. Could you give us an example of other measures that you would consider in addition to the MCA scores, and you noted other assessments?
Sure. Madam Chair, let me just take one quick second, and you may already know this, and so, but I will share this information with you for those of you that are not aware of this. There's a difference between college admissions and course placement, and so our four-year universities at Minsk U, all of our seven state universities, use ACT scores, high school GPA, class rank, personal essays, a number of different things for admissions purposes. At our state colleges, because we are an open access, open mission set of institutions, all students are accepted or admitted to our colleges without looking at any criteria. However, we do look at what students look at different factors to determine where they can be better placed so that they can be successful. And so Minsk U has had a tradition in the last couple of years here of using ACT scores. 2 years ago, we developed benchmarks that indicate college level readiness. And those were the benchmarks that were recommended by ACT, and so we do use those. We also use AccuPlacer, which is a course placement instrument to help students. And a couple of years ago, Minsk U instituted weighted measures into our AccuPlacer questions, where we ask students a number of non-cognitive questions that helps us to determine. A lot of research is looking at non-cognitive aspects of students, showing that perseverance and grit plays a huge impact in how students may persist through college, and so we're looking at that. Moving into the future, however, Minsk U is aggressively looking at multiple measures, and we want to take into consideration measures and assessments such as high school GPA, courses that students took in high school, class rank if high schools still do use that. We want to see the trend of what courses students take. And then, as you are aware of, Minsk U serves a very large population of returning or adult students. And so we also need to find multiple measures for this population of students that may have a high school transcript from 20 years ago that I'm pretty sure that they have gained more skills than what was on their high school transcript. And so we want to ensure that whatever multiple measures approach that we use is equitably for high school students and for non-high school students. But those are some of the examples of the multiple measures that we're looking at.
Thank you, Ms. Peng. And we want you to continue to do that and add these others. Those are all very good. Ms. Stout.
Thank you. I'm Stacey Stout, Director of Education and Workforce Development Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Chair Erickson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to share with you our support today of HF 2586. As we know, the number of students needing remediation is too high. Post-secondary remediation is duplicative of the responsibilities of the K-12 system. It increases student costs, and it's associated with reduced completion rates. That's students' time and money, plus the diminished likelihood that students will complete secondary education. We all agree that we want to see every student reach post-secondary readiness by the time they graduate high school. We want them to be ready for the workplace or ready for a post-secondary education, college and career ready. This bill, by identifying scores on the MCAs, will help students get a better sense of post-secondary readiness. Students, their parents, and educators will be better informed about a student's academic preparation, whether the student is on target. For those who are on track, they can be encouraged to pursue accelerated courses through options like PSEO and concurrent enrollment. For students who are not on track, support can be provided at that stage to help them excel and avoid remediation later on. This bill will help us to do more earlier to help meet the needs of students wherever they are. This bill will go a long way toward reducing the number of our high school graduates needing remediation by creating a point of information for students earlier on in their academic path. We hope that you'll support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stout. Representative Peterson, you had a question earlier. Are there others in the audience who would like to testify with concerns or in support of this House file? Are there members with other questions? Representative Dabney.
Thank you. And Ms. Stout, your testimony provoked a question. What is the void that this bill is trying to fill?
Ms. Stout.
Chair Erickson, Representative Dabney. I see this bill being helpful in the sense that students are already taking these tests. So now, when they get the score, it will help them understand what that score means for them a little bit better. It adds language that helps them, instead of just seeing the number 7,200, they have an understanding of where that fits in what their potential is and what they can do from that point and where they want to go with that.
Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Madam Chair, because I'm confused. I've got a high school sophomore. So this college and career thing is pretty real right now in my household. So we've got 10th grade, 7 years or so of MCA data that tells us how she's doing. She took the PSAT, and that told us whether she made the career and college benchmark for them. Next year, she'll take the ACT. We've got her GPA. We've got her class rank. We've got parent-teacher conferences. We've got AP and college in the schools that she's doing AP this year. And is signing up for AP in college and the schools for next year already. That's 9 pieces of information that tell me whether she's college and career ready. I'm not seeing a lack of information. I'm not seeing a void of information. I'm not seeing a need for more information, particularly when we run the risk of contradictory information that doesn't add to my sense of what do I need to do to support my daughter moving forward, which leaves me confused. Her district, like many districts in the state, use Naviance as a tool that will tell kids whether not only are they on a path to career college, but given your scores, given your grades, given the classes you've taken, are you on track for a 2-year MNSCU institution, a 4-year public institution. Oh, you want to go to one of the Ivies? Well, we'll tell you whether you're on track for that. I mean, it doesn't pretend that there's one score you have to hit for college. It recognizes that Harvard has different admission criteria than South Dakota State University. I always pick on the Dakotas. I'm not seeing, when I can identify already 9 different sources of information, 10, why I need more.
Ms. Stout.
Chair Erickson, Representative Dabney. I think you're well on your way, and your daughter is going to be set. But the problem we see is that there are still too many students who arrive at college or at the 2-year MNSCU system, and they learn at that point that they need remediation. So for some reason, not everyone is as well informed as your family, and I don't know where that disconnect is, but I think as long as we have these tests, I think adding language that makes them more usable for the parent and the student can only be helpful.
Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll try to finish up. But if I certainly understand and appreciate the challenge. I mean, some of it may be that I believe we only require 3 years of math for high school graduation. So a kid could take a test in 11th grade, be seen as college and career ready, not because of that, not take math in their senior year because, hey, I'm good, and arrive at the college door the following year, or as Ms. Yang indicated, Minsku gets a lot of folks who've been doing other things, and they come in a year or two or three or four years later, and you know what? I forget a lot of math every day, and they've forgotten some over a year, and all of a sudden, they're not prepared. If we're not sure where the disconnect is, shouldn't we spend the time figuring out where the disconnect is rather than simply giving them another piece of information that they will be disconnected from?
Ms. Stout.
Chair Erickson, Representative Dabney. I think as long as we have the opportunity to inform, then that's always a good thing. Putting information in the hands of parents and students is always, I think that's just always a good step. I understand your point. I think that's a good point. We don't know if there's an 11th grader who's going to lose that information. But for the ones that we catch at that point, and they can say, oh, wait a second, I'm going to need remediation. Can I get some help now? I think that brings a lot more encouragement to that student rather than if they learn that news when they're a freshman and then learn that they have to pay for that. If they learn it while they're in 11th grade, so this isn't, it's not catching that student who decreases in their knowledge within that year, but the ones who are not at the point that they should be and we can catch that, then this is just, it's just one more tool. And it does sound like there are a lot of pieces of information that you've had access to, which is great. But we just want to make sure that if there's an opportunity to put the information in the hands of parents and students, then we want to encourage that.
Well, thank
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'll just end with observing that if I've got 10 pieces of information all on the same topic and I'm not getting it, an 11th piece of information isn't necessarily going to suddenly make the light bulb turn on over my head. Maybe what we need is more school counselors to engage kids and say, you know, Jimmy, do you realize that you're not on track to where you want to go? And maybe the void isn't the information, it's human connections to connect that information to the real world for kids and parents.
Thank you.
Representative DeRusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to note, and perhaps it was just an unfortunate choice of words, but Ms. Stout, a moment ago you mentioned that what we're looking at is the potential for a student to succeed, and I want to make clear that that's not really what this is about. This is about a snapshot in time, you know, together with all the school records, but it's at that moment what that student is prepared for. But that, we should not be implying to our students that means that their potential is limited by where they're at that moment, because there are many students who for many, many reasons may need more time to get up to some, you know, like I mentioned before, because they came in with English as a second language, and so their reading and math skills weren't where everybody else's are by that time. So it's really, you know, we just need, as a committee, we need to acknowledge that we're not talking about limiting anybody and tracking anybody for life into some limited career.
Ms. Stout.
Madam Chair, Representative, I did not mean to imply that it's identifying someone's potential. I probably maybe misworded what I meant. I just wanted to say if they're informed as to where they are, then they can look forward and continue to strive toward their potential. I wasn't meaning that it would in any way identify their potential. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just like to comment that since we basically have two battery of tests, or have had in Minnesota, the MCAs and the ACTs, and that last year we passed a law dealing with ACTs and remediation, and I assume that'll be working, that we shouldn't do the same thing with MCAs. I mean, those are the two major testing systems we have. We've already done remediation addressed it with the ACT, we should do it with the MCAs.
Is there anyone else with a question or a comment? Hearing none, seeing none, the chair will renew Representative Bennett's motion that House File 2586 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Thank you, everyone who participated in this. And again, Department, I seem to be the one defending you, and I'm happy to do that because I think what you have developed here is exactly what I would want to receive as a parent based on whether or not my child is making progress. And this is going to engage parents. So thank you. I really appreciate it as a former teacher and a parent and grandparent. Representative Peterson, will you move to the testifying table and present 2890? And I know you have lots of testifiers here, and we welcome them tonight. Please say your name for the record so we have that official.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Representative Roz Peterson, and I'm here to discuss House File 2890.
And Representative Peterson, I will move House File 2890 for a hearing tonight and for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And you have an amendment, don't you?
Yes.
And members, this did come in late, but I believe that Andrew checked with the DFL research and we will allow Representative Peterson to offer this amendment. So the A2 amendment, Representative Peterson moves the A2 amendment. Will you explain it before we vote on it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't
to the extent you can, you know, without explaining your whole bill.
Thank you very much. Scott, could I have a piece of paper so I can have it in front of me? My apologies, Madam Chair.
Members, this begins on page 2 of our bill, line 16.
Yeah, this amendment is definitely technical in nature, and so, and page 2, line 16, it's delete such as return and insert premised on returns, and page 2, line 17, delete may offer, and page 2, line 31, after college, insert readiness, and after interim, insert or formative, and delete that R. And then
page 3,
delete. Page 3, delete lines 4 to 6.
Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you. You know, Representative Peterson, this is fine, but it is awfully late, and I don't think it's entirely technical. I think this does go to some substantive changes in the bill. So we all know the rules.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, we do know the rules.
This was working with Lisa Larson, and mm-hmm. Madam Chair, so that it was better aligned with what we have in law right now. Mm-hmm. So,
thank you.
So, all those in favor of the adoption of the Representative Yusrov, you don't want us to vote on it, huh?
I haven't quite finished identifying the changes yet, Madam Chair.
Sorry.
Does everyone have a copy of this?
Well, they should have in their folder. We did include it.
Okay, thank you.
Because I thought we had an agreement with the DFL that we would be able to offer this. And Representative Dabney is correct. It's probably more than technical. But we're going to work through that now as you explain your bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Yusrov. Discussion.
Well, the issue really about whether there's agreement or not is that we've had 11 groups in the building today, and I've had constituents from pillar to post today, so it's the first time I've looked at it.
Well, we are laying over the bill. We're not voting it up or down, so I think we should deal with the amendment, the A2. All those in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the bill is in the order in which the author wants it. So please proceed, Representative Peterson,
to explain
expanding innovation zone opportunities.
Thank you, Chair Erickson. As you may recall, we did receive a report on innovation zones, and I think the key about innovation zones is we want to have our school districts and educational system to be allowed to be as innovative as possible. And so after starting 4 innovation zones, and had some time to work with it, they ran into a few glitches to be able to be the most innovative they could possibly be. And as the MDE report suggested, including charter schools, public and private partnerships, to be included as partners would also help school districts to be able to use the community resources that they have, allow exemptions from high school learning standards, teacher evaluations, and state testing, all under the purview of the commissioner, of course, and then include a panel of expertise on innovation, and then also partner with the research university. So one example of this is being able to just take attendance once instead of in all the different programs that students might be incorporated into. I mean, for example, in Lakeville, they're doing the MNCAPS, which is a medicine and healthcare pathway, so they can really start aligning their education and having some opportunities to look into other career pathways. And this is something that I think will help address our workforce issues that we're working with, but they're running into glitches because they need to take attendance, for example. And then from here, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers. And I don't know who would like to start first, but...
Okay. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Johnson. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Kurt Johnson with Education Evolving, and on behalf of a broad coalition of organizations who worked on this bill and support it, we thank you for paying attention to it this evening. I'm reminded, because I'm old, that almost to the day 25 years ago, I and a small band of people were tugging at your coattails and prowling the halls trying to persuade you to pass a little bill called chartering, which became the first one in the nation, and you know where that went. And I mentioned that only because what you did in 2012 in passing the first version of this innovation zones bill has the potential, if we can liberalize it and add to it and give people more authority to use it, it has the same kind of breakthrough potential. The fundamental premise at work here is that we ought to move toward letting education improve the way other successful industries do. If you look around, the best examples you can find, you see that people get to try things. If they've got ideas, they get to implement them. They get to learn from them. They even get to fail sometimes. So we have districts that are willing to try new and different ways to get accountable results. I'm reminded of this little thing that is now ubiquitous in all of our pockets and purses. Your device, whether it comes from the Apple or the Android family, this did not happen because people in that industry did the same thing today that they did the previous day. It happened the same way that Kodak engineers invented the digital camera in 1975. It happened the same way the Wright brothers in their relentless pursuit of getting a craft heavier than air to fly worked at it for years until they finally succeeded, but they were allowed to try something even while the rest of us were riding trains or in horse-drawn carriages. So that's the same kind of spirit of audacity and research and innovation that we think ought to come to the education sector, and the policy scene couldn't be riper for it, as the No Child Left Behind regime has lasted over a dozen years, now gives way to a system that appears to be devolving much more authority back to states, which then we expect will devolve more authority to districts, and they may devolve more authority to schools. But essential to all that is a mindset that is open to people trying new and different things, innovation. So we're going to hear next from Jay Haugen, who is the superintendent of the Farmington School District, who, along with Jeff Ronnenberg in Spring Lake Park, probably has the deepest experience with the innovation zones that we have. And he's not had an easy ride of it, and he'll tell you why.
Welcome to our committee, Mr. Haugen. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Jay Haugen. Again, I'm superintendent of the Farmington Area Public Schools. In partnership with Spring Lake Park, it's kind of interesting that us two are together. They're 45 miles from us, but digitally, they're right next door. They're a very diverse district. We're a very outer ring suburban school that's just starting to become diverse. Together, we serve over 12,000 students. I also acknowledge that our neighbors, Lakeville and Pyre Lake, are also part of innovation zone. And so I like to think we speak with all of us. I have two purposes, and forgive me, it'll take a little bit of time because I want you to understand us and our work as a context of then why we are here today, and that's my role. I'm here to embellish a little bit on what Dr. Johnson just said and review the key points of the bill. We as educators, thousands of us, for decades, have spent immense amount of time, energy, and passion and resources for an effort to create a system of schools that inspires and engages every student. But in looking around, we see little real change in regard to providing high levels of success for all, especially given the immensity of our effort and the caring in our hearts. I know you feel the same frustration, for you share our hopes and dreams. But still today, large segments of our student population don't find anything like success in school. Vast numbers of students still mostly comply. They go through the motions and do fine, but never really find their place, their purpose. What if all the laws, rules, and expectations of the current system keep us from reaching the high goal of every student being successful? What if we will never make significant progress unless we clear the slate? I represent an innovation zone, one of the first. Our role is to be your R&D site, to create and implement new systems, to find answers to these and other questions. Though the current innovation zone law grants little relief and provides no funding, we have just used the idea of an innovation zone to inspire our staff, students, and community to create a new system of education. And we have found that even things that make sense in our current system may have no meaning and may become impediments to a new design. Innovation is about doing things differently to get wildly better results. What are we designing? We are creating a system that personalizes the education for every student, a system that bases educational decisions at the student level, including customizing learning pathways based on each student's strengths and talents, often making students accountable for embedding the standard in their own learning. A system where students are wholly engaged because they are the agents of their own learning, self-directed, moving at their own pace, meeting their highest aspirations. Where the sky is the limit, there is no glass ceiling. We hold ourselves accountable as a school system through a district scorecard that measures student engagement, student self-direction, 21st century skills, student service, personalization, and standards. And if you're looking for the kind of measures that you need to say, will a student be successful in life or in college, I propose those are a pretty good place to start. It is clear that we have a big agenda, and anything that is not important to our effort or duplicative is a burden and an obstacle. As an innovation zone, Farmington has become a school district that is truly leading the way. 100 school districts have sent teams to see the future of education in our halls. All our halls, not just a few classrooms or a couple of buildings, you're all invited to make a similar visit. So a natural question then is, why do we need legislation if we can do this anyway? First, we are not unique. Many educators, schools, school districts, and groups of school districts have for decades made significant strides and found great success in this direction, only to fall back or be dragged back to the median and the familiar. The system has a powerful ability to do that. It was elegantly designed to get exactly what we are getting, and those who try to create a new system outside of its boundaries often pay the price. In regard to our current effort, we are just scratching the surface. Imagine a system that truly personalized the education for every student, providing them and their families the ability to customize their own education. Imagine all students moving at their own pace, not being held back or running out of learning. This innovation bill is actually just the tip of the iceberg for what we will need to ask of you, but we are respecting the brevity of this session and bringing the minimum we need to move forward. Currently bumping it up against mandates of the system. We have students who finish a course in 6 weeks, and in our system they are not required to keep attending that course, but are free to work on their own learning pathway. We have students who take 2 courses at the same time because they can. We have times during the day where staff and students have office hours and freely interact together, and days when students learn from their teachers remotely. The level of engagement of our students may be through the roof because of this, but there is no box to check to account for the time within current compliance measures. We are at risk of running afoul of seat time requirements and have actually lost state funding because of our successful innovative approach. Without relief, we probably can go a little further, and there will be increasing pressure to go back. And so, in summary, to summarize the bill, our public schools must become the lab schools of the 21st century. At least a handful of schools must engage in hard research about new and different ways for improving education. When you pass this bill, you will be giving a few districts and chartered schools permission to research new ideas. Nothing in this bill can be done without your permission. Only you can let us research new models not contemplated by current law. The bill amends current 2012 session law, which created the innovation zones, but did not give members exemption from current laws. It will permit sites to use a few of the current statutory provisions of adult basic education in our high schools. Will permit high school sites to take advantage once a day, once a day rather than every period, thereby enabling students to be learning from a wide variety of places and experiences. Permits high schools to personalize student math standards based on their career path. Permits research in how we evaluate students. We do a lot of testing now. Let's focus our testing and provide data that are useful for teachers and improve that accountability. And so to talk about the specifics of some of that, we have one of the experts in the field when it comes to testing and assessment, really in our state, Dave Heisted from Bloomington.
Welcome, Dr. Heisted. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you,
for the
Madam
record
Chair.
And begin.
My name is David Heisted. I'm the Executive Director of Research in Bloomington Schools after spending many, many years in Minneapolis schools doing the same work. I'm very excited to it's hard for a statistician to show the kind of excitement that Jay has for innovation, but I'll do my best here. So I just want to talk about three things briefly. One is what Superintendent Haugen just mentioned, is that in this bill we have the ability to make flexible choices of coursework based on the pathways of students. So Bloomington this year has a college and career academy where we have students that are specializing in IT or in medical technical, EMR certification, juvenile or criminal justice, what we'd like to do is each one of those pathways has really different kinds of needs in terms of mathematics. So I talked to the person who's the chair of the math department at Dunwoody Institute, and they really got me enthused about this because they're already starting to do this. For those engineers that need the higher level math, they need something even beyond what's being offered. For those IT folks, they could probably use more time coding and actually doing computer programming. For the folks that are going into cosmetology, they might need more emphasis on measurement and other kinds of practical mathematics skills. And, of course, being a statistician, I think everybody should have statistics. So what this provision would do would provide options for us to work with the employers, find out what kind of math is required for each of the pathways, and then customize it. And then we would expect that all students master Algebra 1 because that is really foundational for so many different things. But the advanced Algebra 2 and calculus, those would be the folks going on in mathematics in higher levels, and then we would customize for other pathways. The second thing I wanted to talk about is the research component of this. We want to make sure that we do rigorous research to show that these different kinds of pathways produce results for students that are different from what we've seen before. And to do that, we have contracted with a national expert, an economist, Ray Robertson, who's worked with the Department of Economic Development in the past and done excellent work on what's called return on investment. So this would be not only are the students who are in the pathways doing better than comparable students that are matched on demographics and test scores, et cetera, but what is the return for every dollar that you invest in this college and career academy what is the return to the individual student and to society in terms of wages and in terms of not being involved in county services. There are a whole range of different things that go into this model. So we want to make sure that we report back to you results periodically that actually demonstrate that the innovations are working or not. And if like with the Wright brothers, the first attempt doesn't work, we will need to reshape it. The third thing I wanted to mention is the reduced testing time for high school students. What we're proposing is, well, currently in Bloomington, we've got the MAP assessment, the Measures of Academic Progress. A lot of members have become familiar with this because most of the districts in the state are using the MAP assessment in addition to the MCAs. So we have the MAP assessment, and then we have the MCAs, and then we have the ACTs. If we were to have the MAP assessment take the credit for the MCA test and use our equated scores to show the same levels of proficiency, we could cut our testing time in half. Also, there's a tendency for people to spend a lot of time practicing or getting ready for these MCA tests, and so we're really emphasizing the teacher-driven use of these tests for instruction. Our teachers love the MAP test because they get instantaneous results that show how every student in their classroom did from last year to this year the day after the test is done. And they also then set their PLC goals, their professional learning communities, based on how much learning takes place for every student. We also have done the research to show that the MAP actually predicts college readiness better than the MCAs. We've done extensive correlations, and we found that for white American students, there is no difference. But for Hispanic, American Indian, and African American students, there's a much better prediction from the MAP to the ACT than there is from the MCA. And the reason is that the MAP test not only tests the fifth grade standards, but if a student has already mastered fifth grade, it tests the sixth grade standards. And if a student isn't quite there yet, their language proficiency is lower, you'll still have a very accurate test, and you'll find out what the student can master below grade level. So it would be a reduction in time. That would be the big benefit, but an emphasis on what teachers really value, which is the MAP assessment, which gives strengths and weaknesses and is really tied to college and career readiness. So those are my three main points, and we'd be glad to take questions at any of the testifiers related to this bill.
Ms. Larson, I think you found the need for a technical change before we proceed. Would you explain that to us, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, members. To make the intent consistent and not in the least bit ambiguous, if members would be good enough, on page 2, on line 2.19, it's paragraph C says, an interested partnership may structure. And then the bill goes on to list possible components of the plan. And I believe the intent is to say it need not be all of these things,
right,
because the language is permissive. It says may. So may I suggest that on 2.34, the last word on that line, instead of and, replace it with or, just to be consistent, because the list is permissive, as the may indicates on 2.19.
Thank you, Ms. Larson, and I'll move that technical change, and since it's technical in nature, we don't need to vote on it. Thank you very much, and please, Representative Peterson, note that technical change in your bill. Questions for our testifiers? Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's much to love and a number of things of concern, and I'd kind of like to put what you just said about the MAP on a loop. But it does bring up a question of, this is maybe directed at the larger group, but lines 2.20 to 2.23, talking about just what you just finished up talking about, reducing duplicative assessments.
That's an or.
Yes. But if this is something that we would allow for these schools, why are we not doing that for other schools? If it's justified as something that could be done in one of these schools.
Well, committee, I believe, and department affirm this. I think we have to receive a waiver, do we not, to be able to, from ESSA? And we don't know yet about any of that. But
thank you, Madam Chair. So would that also apply to it being used in one of these plans? So that the MDE would have to...
MDE will address that, yes, but that's okay. The way I understand
yes,
it.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Representative Yeruso, Kevin McHenry, Assistant Commissioner, the Department of Education. In regards to your question in terms of how this could be implemented, right now we do have to follow state and federal requirements to administer assessments. This would actually be going away from the assessments that we are required to administer. We would need a waiver in order for to proceed
yes.
on this.
Yes.
I did want to make sure that you all were aware as well. We have had a legislative meeting as well as a stakeholder meeting on ESSA. We are waiting to get the federal regulations and guidelines. We expect to receive those by late May or early June to get more details on what we can and can't do around assessments. And that's something that obviously we're more than happy. We want to make sure that we're including all stakeholders in the discussion of how we can implement assessments. What we do know is that we still do need to implement assessments statewide to meet our statewide standards. In the bill, it does say we do need to have a 95% participation rate. There are avenues in terms of being out of seeking a waiver, but that's something that we do need to get that federal guidance, and we expect to get that in late May or early June.
Representative Yeruso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then on lines 2.4 to 2.8-ish, talking about the expanding the potential partners.
Yes.
I have some concerns about government, well, partly governance, partly financial, but mostly student supervision. When it's the partnership of two school districts, we have all of our requirements for licensure, the legal accountability for the students in place. That would certainly still apply for charter schools. Those are still public schools. We've made a little bit of wiggle room and let students go off and do PSEO off campus. But now we're bringing in employers, and we're bringing in a group of people that is not subject to any of that training and licensure, and I'm a little fuzzy on whether they're subject to mandatory reporter requirements and things like that. So what, and again, of course, this would have to be a plan that is approved.
Correct.
But I it really leaves it open to, I don't know what the nature of that partnership is.
Dr. Heisted.
Madam Chair and Representative, we have a relationship with several employers right now where we have the experts in the field teaching the college and career readiness courses. And we would work very closely with them to make sure that we are giving the highest rigor and best kind of courses. Currently, we would really benefit from the expanded flexibility to offer a different kind of scope and personalization for each one of these students above and beyond what we can do already.
Representative Yeruso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, my question really wasn't about content.
Okay.
My question is
about the partnerships, right?
About the partnerships, and also you bringing up mm-hmm. the teachers. Part of teacher licensure is learning what your legal responsibility is for the students, and that takes many forms. There's child protection, there's data privacy, there's reporting requirements, and none of that is being provided when we have outside experts coming in. And we've kicked that around quite a bit in terms of the community experts. But it's a concern when we start doing that. And it And it depends on somewhat on what age students you're talking about. You're talking about high school, I think. But as we push that down farther and farther to freshmen and whatnot, it becomes a larger and larger concern. So when you have those outside people delivering that content, is there a licensed teacher in the room with the kids?
Mr. Haugen, Superintendent Haugen, can you respond to that, please?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Something that most school districts have is some kind of workplace setting for students. There's always a teacher who's the licensed teacher who's in charge of that. It's that work experience kind of thing where students get to really try out a career right in the field, and there's always a teacher who's assigned to that. So that really is our practice, and I think this just kind of strengthens that relationship. I don't think it's meant to change that the school district is in charge. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Representative Urso.
On the 2.33 and 2.34, mm-hmm. allowing a student to use a course in applied math or STEM as an equivalent to Algebra 2. Now I have some concerns for some students coping with Algebra 2. Really my concerns are more about the way in which it's taught. However, even though I'm a scientist and an engineer, I don't find it acceptable to substitute a STEM course for Algebra 2. That means you could take biology instead of Algebra 2. That means you could, there's quite a number of things that I wouldn't, there's some things I would think were terrific to substitute for Algebra 2. If you successfully completed a physics class, you'd be demonstrating the same kind of knowledge that you would need for Algebra 2.
Dr. Heisted.
I would just say that this is innovation. It is a small pilot with potentially 8 awards from the commissioner. The commissioner would be the arbiter along with this advisory committee of what really, is a quality submission. But I think we not only need to do best practice and program evaluation to make sure that we're getting really good return on the best practice, but as Curtis Johnson mentioned, we have to be able to innovate with things that haven't been tried before. And this hasn't been tried before. But there are some really big research efforts going on to really try to align the kind of mathematics with careers. And one agency, the National Education and Economy Group, put out an extensive report indicating that they really strongly felt that MCA 2 mastery wasn't necessary for most careers.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative Urso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really do appreciate the aligning what you need with a particular thing, and then that's helping a student achieve their goals. But we should think carefully before we put things in place that have the effect of limiting what other things that student can do. And many, many, many of us don't do, we don't stick to one path. And we don't intend to create a situation for our students where you stick to one path. I have many relatives in Norway in particular that has a German-style educational system. And in their system, you stick to one path. You choose your path when you're 15 years old, and you stick to that path, and you kind of never have an opportunity to switch onto a different path. Their system doesn't provide that. One of the beauties of the American educational system is you're not shut out. You have multiple opportunities. But if we take a kid who's 16 years old, who is interested in this thing right now, and say, that's great, let's give you everything you need for that, but we're not going to simultaneously give you these other things that you might need for the other things you might do, then we're limiting, we're creating a hardship later that they don't even know about. So I have, like I said, I have mixed feelings about the Algebra 2 for everybody, but I don't want to just open it up kind of carte blanche and say, well, you don't necessarily need that, so let's do whatever it is you need for this one thing that you're talking about. And so we ought to make sure that we think about what other things would be useful substitutes for that. So this is too broad for me to put in without more discussion. Thanks.
Dr. Halgan, what in this bill can already be done without legislative approval?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Really interesting question. I think a lot of that is probably the things that we're doing right now. The teachers do have a lot of ability within their classroom to personalize an education for students. And to help students become, again, kind of the agents of their own learning, learn the skills. So in regard to pathways, students, the idea is, no, they're not on one pathway. Students get to change and flexibly change and work on their own pathways. So some of that can be done from classroom to classroom. It's when it bumps up against the whole system. You know, again, seat time requirements. Requirements for, sure, now I'm, so what are some of the ones that, you know, seat time requirements have been such a big one for us.
Independent studies.
Yes, independent study. Oh, so, and something that's been swirling around as we've been having the conversation, the things that is difficult is, you know, in today's age, we should be able to recognize any student learning. If a student has valid learning that they can demonstrate and demonstrate with our professionals through our professional staff, they should be able to get credit for that. You know, that can be rather difficult, you know, associated again with seat time requirements and things. So we can do a lot, and we are doing a lot. We think that that the next step will take some of this relief.
So, Assistant Commissioner McHenry, what do you see in this proposal that could already be done under our present innovation zone law, or session law, I should say?
Madam Chair, members, in looking at the bill, I think the main comments that I did want to make was if we're getting rid of, or if we're opting out of our statewide assessments, that is something that's going against state law and federal law. Obviously, we understand the need and the want to innovate, and we want to be supportive of that, but at the same time, we do want to make sure that we are following our state and federal laws, and that's the point I wanted to make specifically in this bill. We're more than happy to continue the conversation with the authors and with the advocates on this, but we feel until we have some clarification from ESSA, it will be difficult for us to come out and say that we could support this and the changes that they are approving. One thing I did want to mention in this, it might be just a little bit technical, but we are looking at pulling together a group of professionals in the field to review these applications. And we're talking about some big changes in getting rid of assessments. And we've added some new individuals to this group to make recommendations to the commissioner for approval. But we're not adding any specific testing-specific professionals. And we think that might be helpful when we're looking at moving away from the MCAs or another assessment to make sure that what's being done in place, that we can have a conversation about the rigor that is still needed for these innovation zones that they want to bring forward.
Mr. McHenry, is that the proposal that Senator Wigger sent me? That which you just referred?
Madam Chair, I don't know if that's what Senator Wigger had sent to you. He did hear this bill earlier in committee, and that's something that was raised. I don't necessarily know if it was in testimony, but that's something that we raised, we thought was important to make sure that we did have testing professionals as part of this discussion, because this such a big part of this bill is around moving away from the assessments we need for state and federal.
And that was the content of the proposal he sent me today. So,
Madam Chair?
Dr. Heisted.
We added two experts to the committee from the previous law, one of which is an educational psychology professor. This would be somebody like Michael Rodriguez or Mark Davison, folks that are experts in assessment, measurement, and program evaluation. So the intent of that was to have the very best expert that we could find on this committee. So I totally agree. We need a measurement person. And I also put on there that we needed somebody from higher education who is familiar with the research in higher education so we could cover that base as well.
Representative Flanagan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Heiss said it's fun to be on this side of the table after spending a lot of time with you in Minneapolis Public School, so happy to have you back here again. I wanted to speak to just a little bit about the alternative learning sort of settings, allowing students to customize. As we're looking at strategies to close the achievement gap, this seems like a really powerful way to do it. The attentionality, the relationship building, and frankly, I get excited when I see opportunities for internships and experience within the field. I totally hear students choosing one path, but I think the solid foundation that they get in one particular area then becomes a launching pad for additional opportunities. So I just wanted to ask a little bit about I think the thing that we can learn from is clearly the evaluation that you will do that will come out of that. Can you just talk a little bit about some of the measurements that you'll be looking at?
Dr. Heist.
Representative Flanagan and Madam Chair, we have already contracted with an economist who's an expert in return on investment to get the overall perspective on our return on every dollar that is spent on the program. But in addition to that, we're going to be looking at the data that are already available on the SLEDS, State Longitudinal Education Data System. I've spent this year looking at the SLEDS data and have found that actually test scores aren't the best predictor of college readiness. GPA is a much stronger predictor than any of the test scores. But there's also research on other areas of non-cognitive grit and perseverance was mentioned recently. We have a strong relationship with Search Institute, and we've already administered their persistence survey to all of our high school, and we're going to continue on doing research with them. And we also are working with a researcher on executive functioning, you know, which is more the attention and some of those other non-cognitive aspects, which you can measure starting out in preschool. So we do want a multiple measure system that really accounts for more than just an ACT score or an MCA score or even a MAP score. But the main emphasis will be on growth. How much learning takes place from the beginning of the year to the end of the year? How well are students doing after they've been out of high school for 2 years, 4 years, 6 years? So what I found is that I mentioned GPA. GPA has a very strong predictor in whether you're going to complete a six-year degree or certificate in either a two-year or a four-year college. So we're going to be using those multiple measures as well as a lot of information from teachers. Teachers are the real experts, and so it'll be what we call a mixed method evaluation that will involve surveys and interviews with teachers as well as the hard data that we get out of following up with the D database. And I have to say that Commissioner Pogemiller committed himself to make sure that we could get to the D data without having to have Social Security number. We were very worried about the requirement to have Social Security numbers for the privacy concerns that all of us have in releasing our information. And what the department is going to do is going to go through the motor vehicles database to be able to do matches without having to do Social Security numbers. So we're all pulling together to make sure that this has very long-term benefits as well as the short-term kinds of outcomes. Thank you.
Representative Daphne.
Last question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to say, the longer I'm here, the more confused I get.
Not the whole night or just this bill?
Oh, well, let's see. It's 16 years that I've been here. So, but I was primarily focused on tonight.
But you're Mr. Simath.
Well, yes, and I appreciate Representative Russo bringing up that the idea of having an agriculture class substitute for Algebra 2 is a bit of a stretch. But what I'm more confused about, let me start, if I may, Madam Chair, with a question to Dr. Heisted. Did you just say that GPA was a better predictor of college and career readiness than standardized test scores?
Yes.
Dr. Heisted.
Madam Chair and Representative Devney, I was astounded at just how strong GPA was. We always hear that grades, you know, and grade inflation, you can't pay attention to grades because they're subjective. But within a district where you have standards-based grading or you have a very strong grading practices, it is probably true that the GPA has twice the weight of the test scores. And so it, encapsulated in that is the persistence, you know, to get the kinds of grades, you have to have more than just intellect. And so I'm very pleased with that result because it confirms one of my hypotheses, that it's the engagement factors and it's really important to have completion of your work. It's also important to look at the social skills, so we need to develop better measures of the social skills as well and incorporate in these profiles. So our PGP, Personal Growth Plan for Every Student, has a social component, has a completion component, has academic and then GPA, and then attendance. Attendance also predicted pretty well outcomes. So sometimes test people like me talk as if test scores are the mean or the only thing, and we shouldn't do that because it's just not true.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Heisted. Maybe a question for the bill author. And this does, oh, Mr. McKenna, you may not want to go far. Because I was looking at you and then I thought, nah, we'll ask Representative Peterson instead. So really my confusion is here tonight trying to get Representative Bennett's bill that we just spent an hour on fit with your bill.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because the superintendent, who I have a great deal of respect for, said, let us use the MAP test instead of the MCAs. Okay, I've got a big soft spot for the MAP tests, but they're not correlated to Minnesota standards. So if you let me use the MAP test instead of the MCAs, I no longer know whether the school is teaching to standards. Now, that may be a good thing or a bad thing, but you just blew up Representative Bennett's bill, and then Dr. Heisted wonked what was left of it. I got the chamber telling me we've got to have an 11th measure of college career readiness, and you're flushing the whole thing down the toilet with this bill.
Just the levity we needed.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And I've tried to be really careful about exactly what metaphors I use here, because I could easily go off into places that we don't want on tape. But really, we wasted an hour on Representative Bennett's bill if this becomes law, because according to her testifiers, as a parent, I would have no way of knowing if my child was on track for college and career readiness because this guy had him take the MAP test instead of the MCAs, at which point I have no idea. Can you make it make sense?
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I will attempt to do so. The thing that to remember here is these are what I would call, like we say in education a lot of times, these are pilot projects. Because we have a lot of things to address, whether it's alignment of our K-12 standards up to the higher education system where students are needing remediation, and we're trying to address that. And I know that at the legislature, we try to do a lot of different things of, okay, how can we address this problem? What these guys are doing is like, they're in the trenches, and they're saying, you know what? There's a reason why we have problems. We have problems because we make decisions here trying to fix it, and these guys are actually there dealing with it one-on-one, and they're saying, you know, if we have some autonomy, we can maybe try some different things. Maybe it'll come out and say, well, we looked at the MAPS testing, and boy, it sure didn't work at all, you know, or whatever the case may be. But unless we try it someplace, we're never going to know if it works for everybody. So this law is not for everyone. It is for 4 to 8 innovation zones so that we can allow some autonomy. They have cultures in their school system that these teachers are just dying to break out, to try something new, to engage their students, to help them learn. But until we allow them to do so, we're going to be stuck into the same widget factory system that was created in the 1940s, and we're still preparing our students the same exact way that we've always done it all along, because that's what we know and that's what we're comfortable with. And these guys are taking it to the next level. They're bringing our personalized learning for every student into the 21st century. And that is why we're trying to sort of release the barriers with the oversight of the commissioner, because guess what? None of this stuff that they do is going to go past the commissioner, because there has to be a level of oversight. There has to be a level of accountability. And you mentioned it yourself, between the 9 different measures that the parents have, you know, there will be accountability of some form, but maybe it won't be the exact one that we see today. But until we try something new, we'll never know.
Can we end on that, Representative Davenport?
You know, Representative Peterson, very articulate.
Thank you.
But it, to your credit, but it still leaves us with not one standard of high school preparation, but as many standards as we want. Because if you want to be a pipe fitter, we'll hold you to this standard. If you want to be a carpenter, we'll hold you to this. If you want to be a cop, we'll hold you to this. If you want to be a teacher, we'll hold you to this. We're talking multiple standards when we've been talking about the need for one. If, you know, when I was in high school, I wanted to be a cook, at which point there was one standard. Later, I wanted to be something else. But I'm betting if you'd prepared me to be a cook, the science would have only been so much, and the math, you know, once you got one cup down, you're pretty good. Teaspoons and tablespoons, I still have some trouble with, but I know where to look. You know, I later went different directions. This wouldn't have prepared me to go those different directions. And I'm still trying to put Representative Bennett's bill and your bill into my head at the same time, and it's just not working for me. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. I like contradictions, Representative Davenport.
All right.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to come forward and speak with concerns or in support of this innovation piece? Thank you very much, gentlemen. It was most interesting.
Thank you.
Sorry we're keeping you so late. Please say your name for the record and begin. Why don't we start with Ms. Dietrich. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm here with the on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association, where we represent the school board members across the state. And I just want to start by saying that we're going to, I'd like to just take 2 perspectives on this bill. First of all, is that MSBA, and myself more specifically, has been a part of the analysis of the innovation zones applications. And I want to just emphasize that this application process to be part of an innovation zone has not gone away in this bill. They will still have to fill out the application. It will be submitted with all the rest of the innovation zones, and the commissioner ultimately makes the decision. So that piece of accountability remains. Then second of all, I'd like to look at it from the perspective of that at MSBA we have passed a couple of resolutions dealing with innovation zones in the past, and most recently in 2015. And the resolution that passed read that we urge the legislature to allow the commissioner to have more authority in exempting districts from statutes to achieve innovation zone goals. And that did pass our delegate assembly pretty strongly. And so then as school board members, we have a real strong interest in making sure that that we are empowering school districts and our staff to think outside the box and to be the ones to design and model innovation in our schools. We want that to come from our schools, and we want that to be organic and actually come from teachers who know the students best and know what needs to happen. And once again, I just want to reiterate that this program still retains the collaboration goal of innovation zones. It requires goal setting and reporting. It requires school board approval, which we think is important, obviously. And it has a research and evaluation component to it. And once again, the approval process. And so, once again, I just want to reiterate, I think that this the school district has done a phenomenal job in actually taking innovation zones to the next generation of innovation zones. And I hope that you will support this proposal. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Gary Amoroso. I serve as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Executives, representing the superintendents as well as other district-level administrators in the state. For those that weren't around the table in 2012, MASA was the lead organization in supporting the original Innovation Zone bill, and so I would view this as Innovation Zone 2.0. Back in 2012, we had a bill that, in order to get bipartisan support, we began to introduce the concepts of innovation and empowering our school districts to work with the commissioner and do some things. And Dr. Haugen's group, along with Dr. Ronenberg's group in Spring Lake Park, they were the first innovation zone that we had in the state, and there have been a couple more added. My former district, Lakeville, got added on with Prior Lake this year. And things are starting to pop. But I know I've had a lot of conversations with Jay over the last couple of years about what was working and what type of things began to be impediments. And he described those beautifully tonight. And so we're excited about the fact that there's conversation. We wouldn't have had this conversation in 2012 about the type of things that the first group of testifiers are asking to be included, looking at the assessments of students. That couldn't have been part of the conversation in 2012. But here we are in 2016. We can have that conversation. And by definition, when you talk about innovation, you're talking about doing something probably that doesn't exist today. And there can be an uncomfortableness with that. But one of the things that I can guarantee you is that every superintendent in the state cares about every single student within their district. And they would not knowingly do anything that would cause any damage to those children in being successful as they move forward. This would be an opportunity on a pilot basis to provide our districts that would be approved by the commissioner to try and do some things. And while it may cause us a bit of uncomfortableness, I'd ask you to also view it from the perspective of excitement and opportunity for students. And I agree that we don't want to create systems that might not have our parents understand where their children are. And one of the things that we've been a little bit more gaining information on lately is the concept of NWEA. A lot of districts use them. The challenge with NWEA has been is that they have not been aligned with our standards. And I can't guarantee this, but there's a strong possibility that a year from now, NWEA will have alignment with the Minnesota standards, which would help eliminate one of the concerns. Now, I know this is 2016, and I'm talking about the possibility of 2017, but there is that strong possibility that may occur. And so what I would ask you to do is continue the conversation, hopefully move the bill forward, and let's see if we can get something passed this year that would be Innovation Zone 2.0. And I greatly appreciate your conversation on this, because I know that all of you sitting around the table care about our students and want to do what's best for them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and thank you for the opportunity. And I thought I understood where the amendment was going, having seen it just a little bit as the hearing started. We'd like to thank Representative Peterson for the general direction of her bill and the amendment, though it sounds like the exemption from MCAs remains, which we oppose. So I'm just going to stick with my original testimony because I think we're really back where we started. One of the business partnership's four guiding principles for education is to give educators greater flexibility so they can offer the programs and services they think will be most effective. And as a result, we've worked on a variety of efforts, including the creation and the expansion of self-governed schools, charter schools, and we supported Madam Chair's work in 2012 to pass the Innovation Zone law that this bill is based on. In short, our members support giving educators greater flexibility within the context of helping all students meet state standards and measuring and reporting student progress on those standards. And while we appreciate the leadership taken by the four pilot projects and Superintendent Hoggins' passion, we don't see House File 2890 is doing a lot to give districts any added flexibility. Instead, the bill's primary focus is on allowing districts to lower state math standards for some students. And Representative Urusso, thank you. I couldn't have said that any better. We used to go there, and there's a reason we have state standards now. The bill also would allow districts to be exempted from participating in the MCA exams, which, as has been noted, are aligned with our state standards, are computer adaptive, and provide student results within hours of completion. A couple reasons why Minnesota moved to a system based on academic standards and aligned assessments was, one, to ensure greater equity in instruction, and two, to give educators more flexibility. Rather than having a system that relied on regulations and compliance, we began to shift to a focus on student results. Obviously, we still have work to do on reducing state regulations for how schools function. But that said, and you've heard it tonight, if a district or districts want to function differently and they can get agreement with their teachers and staff, there's almost nothing they can't do. As you know, we have districts partnering with employers and post-secondary institutions to change the concept of high school. Districts and schools are increasingly using digital platforms and strategies, and others are becoming more efficient by coordinating non-instructional functions under current law. In fact, a strong argument can be made that there are a number of best practices already in use in our schools, and our biggest challenge is taking those best practices to scale. Unfortunately, rather than having a conversation about how we can support broader system-wide improvements, we're focused prematurely on student assessment policies that were just reaffirmed by Congress and the administration, policies that require state assessments to be aligned with state standards and meet several additional criteria. Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, we'd welcome the opportunity to work with you to remove unnecessary state mandates. But more importantly, we'd like to work with you to create a system where schools and districts are encouraged to adopt effective practices and form partnerships without feeling as though they have to first come to the state to ask for permission. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Members, the hour is late, and so the chair renews Representative Peterson's motion that House File 2890, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Thank you very much for everyone who stuck it out tonight in this rather warm room. Hopefully we'll have some air the next time we meet. And until we see each other again, this meeting is adjourned.